Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, MD, one of the doctors of the future.
Good afternoon, good afternoon. Thank you for joining me. Hope you all are doing well out there. This is Dr. Keith Henry, broadcasting here from the Orlando, Florida area, and another beautiful day down here in Orlando. Thank you for listening. We have a fascinating and interesting show for you today. The main topic that we will be talking about is the shocking third leading cause of death in the U.S. First is heart disease, number one. Number two is cancer. And number three is what we'll be talking about today. We will follow the same outline that we always follow. When we talk about the first segment is the Week in Natural News Review segment, where we talk about articles that came out during the week, a few articles we talk about during the week. And this week we'll be talking about, again, like I just said, the shocking third leading cause of death in the U.S. Then we'll also analyze and talk a little bit about another article that talked about how pets, dogs specifically, are developing or have a high incidence of developing cancer as a result of these chemicals that are put on the grass. And then we'll also talk about the flawed ideology of one aspirin a day to help prevent heart attacks. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Also, then in the healing food segment, which is the second segment, we'll be talking about cherries today. We typically take a food and talk a little bit about the benefits of that particular food. And in our third and final segment, the healing herb segment, we'll be talking about one of my favorite herbs, which is milk thistle. Milk thistle is one of my favorite herbs. It's a very, very beneficial herb for your liver. Your liver is very important. We'll be talking about that today, and we'll be talking about the benefits, the extreme benefits of positive benefits of milk thistle upon your liver. And your liver is indeed one of your most important organs for health. And so, again, thank you. You are listening to Phase 3 Wellness, the Phase 3 Wellness podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Henry. As I always say, not long after the live broadcast is over here on Blog Talk Radio, the platform that we use to broadcast it, it will be available in many, many areas as a downloadable podcast here on live on blogtalkradio.com, at Phase 3 Wellness, at Phase 3 Ministries, at YouTube, also on Facebook, at the Phase 3 Wellness Facebook page, et cetera. So again, it'll be available across many, many platforms, and I am confident that you will enjoy the show. We're going to get right to our first segment, the Week in Natural News Review. And we're going to start off first, before we get to our main article here, we're going to start off with the article that came out this week from realpharmacy.com. And it was entitled, "Studies Link Canine Cancers to Lawn Chemicals." And so many people love their pets, especially their dogs. And many people are not aware that oftentimes the chemicals that they themselves place on the lawn, or that are placed on their lawn by professionals, have actually been associated with their pets developing, increasing their risk of developing cancer. According to this particular article, again, from realpharmacy.com, says that lawn chemicals, particularly ones containing 2 and 4-D, have been linked to at least two types of canine cancers. It says that studies found that lawn chemicals travel to neighboring yards and also inside homes, and these chemicals have been found in the urine of dogs whose owners did not even spray their lawns. The authors of the study state how their findings can be used to further research on even human cancers, because think about it. If your pet is going outside and they're tracking these chemicals that increase their likelihood of developing cancer, and then they're tracking these chemicals, those people who keep their pets inside, their dogs inside, they found that these chemicals are tracked back actually into the homes. And so now And then a lot of people have these pets, you know, on their beds or wherever and in their homes. And so now it could actually increase the likelihood of even human beings now being exposed to these carcinogens, these carcinogenic chemicals that which basically means cancer-causing substances. The study, the article went on to point out how the article was based on a six-year study from Tufts University School of Veterinary Medicine. And in this study, they linked lawn pesticides to canine malignant lymphomas, or CML. Based on questionnaire results from dog owners, the study found specifically the use of professionally applied pesticides was associated with a significant 70% higher risk of this canine malignant lymphoma. So if you have professionals come in and put these chemicals on your grass, and if you have your dogs out on that grass, you increase the likelihood that they can develop these cancers, these malignant lymphomas, by 70%. The risk was also higher in those reporting use of self-applied insect growth regulators. A different study, said this article, with similar methods discovered that herbicides also contribute to canine malignant lymphoma. In this different study, the study found that herbicides also containing 2 and 4-D, which is the chemical used, doubled the risk of these lymphomas when dog owners use it 4 or more times per year. And then there was a 2013 study concluded that 2 and 4-D herbicides and other lawn chemicals make the risk of canine bladder cancer significantly higher. So if you want your dog to have a significant increase in the likelihood that they would develop bladder cancer, you can do so, or you will the results of putting these chemicals on the lawns will do that. And the article pointed out also that certain breeds, including beagles, Scottish terriers, Shetland sheepdogs, West Highland White Terriers, and wire hair fox terriers were more susceptible since they have a genetic predisposition to bladder cancer anyway. So if you have one of those breeds are beagles, Scottish terriers, Shetland sheepdogs, West Highland White Terriers, and wire hair fox terriers. They were more susceptible. That doesn't mean that if you don't have one of these breeds that your dog does not all still have a significantly higher chance of developing this bladder cancer from these chemicals. The article pointed out further that the exposure to these chemicals came from ingestion, inhalation, or contact with the skin, and the amount of time needed to restrict pets from a sprayed area has not been determined. So you may keep the dog off of the area for a week or a month or however long, but it really hadn't been determined the amount of time you need to keep them off from them or the likelihood dropping. So, for instance, you may need to keep them off a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or maybe who knows, even longer. The study didn't determine that. The study also found that chemicals were detected in the urine of dogs in 14 of 25 households before lawn treatment, in 19 of 25 households after lawn treatment, and in 4 of 8 untreated households. So chemicals were commonly detected in grass residues from treated lawns and from untreated lawns, suggesting chemical drift from nearby treated areas. So in other words, your neighbors may be treating their lawns, and the chemicals maybe through the as a result of the wind blowing or whatever, may be drifting over into your lawn, and your pets may be coming out and getting exposed to the chemical. Another study found herbicide 2,4-D contaminants inside and throughout homes both prior to and after outdoor application. The study is evidence that pets absorb and track lawn chemicals, and lawn chemicals travel from their intended targets. The study concluded that, quote, removal of shoes at the door and the activity levels of the children and pets were the most significant factors affecting residue levels indoors after application. The studies state that they are important to the health of humans as well as the pets. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma has a similar histological and epidemiological as CML, said the article went on to say, and has also been linked to 2,4-D exposure. So basically it's saying that non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, apparently in humans, has been connected to the same chemical that's causing bladder cancer in dogs. And it went on to say that this 2,4-D chemical has been cited to possibly cause cancer, and the agricultural use of this chemical has increased due to weed resistance to Roundup. So people are using this Roundup, the chemicals in Roundup, and over time, these weeds become more and more resistant to these chemicals. And so it's used more and more, nevertheless. And so it increases the likelihood of these chemicals of both pets and humans being exposed to these carcinogenic chemicals, and thereby increases the likelihood of developing or possibly developing one of these cancers. Now, again, this is Dr. Keith Henry. You are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. We're in our first segment, the Week in Natural News Review segment. And again, I'm going to switch over now to our second article in the series. And after this, we'll get to our main article, which is the shocking third leading cause of death in the U.S. Now, this is an article. This next article is something that I talked about some time ago. And this was talking about what I thought. I was on the radio here in Orlando maybe about 5 years ago. And I talked about this this idea of an aspirin a day reducing the likelihood of heart attacks, especially for elderly people, which was a very popular thing. You've probably seen commercials talking about it, etc. And back then, I mentioned that there may be some benefit to the heart, but how does it weigh in with the benefit that is tied in to the gastrointestinal bleeding that is known to be caused by aspirin? And so this is one of the things that I talked about on the show back then, that I didn't think that the benefits of taking this aspirin and the slight benefit you may get from the heart would be I didn't think that the benefit would I thought that the risk would outweigh the benefit, essentially. And so basically I said so on radio, and now, and I even cited some studies back then, and so now this article here actually is entitled, and this article was taken from Natural Health 365, and basically it addresses that issue again. And the title of the article is Why the One Baby Aspirin Per Day Habit Is So Dangerous. And so it's interesting that now other studies have come out, more information has come out dealing with this. And so the article says that heart disease is a major killer, which it is. It is the number one killer in the U.S. And it's to blame for about 1 in 4 deaths in the United States every year. And it says that with so many of us at risk for heart disease-related symptoms like stroke, heart attacks, and clogged arteries, medicine would have us believe that a baby aspirin would protect us from harm. But the cost would surprise most uninformed health patients. The article goes on to say further that when you see the age-old recommendation of taking an aspirin every day is now being called into serious question, thanks to the initial results of an ongoing double-blind randomized controlled trial called the Aspirin and Reducing Events in the Elderly, or ASPIRE. This study set out to investigate the risk/benefit ratio of taking low dose aspirin. Now, when I addressed this issue some years ago, maybe 5 years ago on the radio, I talked about how it was Bayer Aspirin that did this study, and they were recommending taking an aspirin a day based upon this study. But the aspirin were buffered with magnesium, and I made the argument mainly that magnesium is beneficial for the heart, as the heart is a muscle, and magnesium has been shown to be beneficial for the muscle as well as other things. And so what they didn't really mention to the public was that these aspirin were the benefit of the aspirin, or rather the aspirin were coated with magnesium. And it was my position that the real benefit was more from the magnesium than from the aspirin itself. And so this study cited here, that this ASPIRE study, which was actually and it's still ongoing, it's supposed to end next year in 2019, it's an ongoing double-blind randomized control study. And the article says, since this is something many people over the age of 65 have been instructed to do by their physicians, that is to take an aspirin a day, the researchers' preliminary findings are certainly quite disturbing and should be taken very seriously, the article said. Starting in 2010, the ASPRI study recruited 16,000 people, 16,703 to be exactly, people aged 70 and older from Australia, and 2,411 people from age 70 and older from the United States. The people were randomly assigned to one of two groups. One group would have would take 100 milligrams of aspirin per day, and one group would take a placebo. So that was the study, and all the study participants would have periodic follow-ups to document any changes to their health. The average length of follow-up for the study's most recent data is 4.7 years, so almost 5 years follow-up. To be eligible for the study, the recruited subjects could not have dementia or any physical disability or any other condition managed with aspirin at the start of the trial. The researchers were hoping to determine that what kind of adverse effects would happen by taking aspirin daily and whether those effects outweighed the supposed benefits. Now, prior evidence has suggested that a low dose of daily aspirin can prevent heart problems in middle-aged people and may even reduce rates of intellectual decline and cancer in people who are elderly, but initial findings from the ASPRI study paint a very different story. Now, one of the reasons that some people get frustrated and they say, well, in one minute we're told that this is good for you, and the next minute we're told that it's not good for you. One of the things you have to remember is to dig down deep into the study, and many times companies who stand to make a lot of money from studies being a certain way, coming out a certain way, they will fund their own studies. And so, you know, that's not, you have to take that into consideration. You also have to take into consideration that a lot of people can be generally dishonest. People can be dishonest, so we have to understand that. We have to also have to take into account previous studies that have been done. And if you have previous studies that have shown something that's been, I mean, legitimate studies, and then all of a sudden a new study comes out that contradicts all of these previous credible studies, then you have to ask yourself, okay, who's done this study, and why is it coming out so different from the previous studies? Maybe hundreds, even thousands of studies sometimes. And so there's many things to consider. So just remember that, and just remember those time-tested common sense things. We know some things are just common sense. And so, but let me get back on this topic with this this study saying that this idea of the baby aspirin has been shown, or taking an aspirin a day being beneficial for the heart, is basically not as is not really as it was has been made out to be. So now, for one thing, the article points out the rates of dementia, stroke, heart disease, and physical disability were largely similar among the two groups. So there were the rates of sickness pretty much among the two groups from Australia and the U.S. Again, the rates of dementia, stroke, heart disease, etc., over the time of the study was pretty much the same. And it said this implies that taking aspirin daily did not offer significant protection against disease and disability for healthy older adults. So think about that for a minute. You had one group taking a placebo, and you had another group taking his aspirin every day, and yet the rates of dementia, the rates of stroke, the rates of heart disease, and physical disability were largely similar among the two groups. The article went on to say further that more sobering data shows that the rate of bleeding incidents, as a well-known adverse effect of aspirin, which is one of the things that I pointed out some years ago about the gastrointestinal bleeding alone. There's other bleeding that can occur as well. But according to the study, it shows sobering data that the rate of bleeding incidents was significantly higher among people in the aspirin groups, because aspirin is a blood thinner. Additionally, aspirin-taking subjects were found to have a higher risk of dying from cancer. So, again, you know, you're going to always do well when you follow what I call here the laws of health that the Creator has given us. That's, again, those laws of health are trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control and temperance. Taking drug medication, aspirin, on a daily basis, remember, all drugs have side effects, both known and unknown. And it's not like it's not been known for a while that aspirin has, at the very least, can cause gastrointestinal bleeding. But now it's finding, now they're, from this long study, they found that the subjects taking the aspirin had a higher risk of developing cancer, and And of course, of also of bleeding incidents. And so basically they say, what's the bottom line so far in your study? This study's early data suggests that taking aspirin daily not only fails to confer protective health benefit, but actually increases the risk for things like stomach, intestinal, and brain bleeding, as well as certain types of cancer. So, in the meantime, like I said before, there are things that you can do to help your heart. Exercise, eating loads of fruits and vegetables in the fresh state as much as possible, organic if you can, if you can afford it, or growing your own. You know, just those things that we know that we should do. Also, you may need to take supplements, high quality supplements in certain areas. Eating high quality foods, exercising, getting out in the sunshine, dealing with your stress. This is why we say trusting in the Creator, not taking on problems that you can do nothing about, or not stressing out over them. Again, stress is a deadly, deadly distress. Really, can be a deadly, deadly factor in contributing to overall sickness. So just understand that health is a marathon and not a sprint, and we need to understand that. So again, let's get to this is Dr. Keith Henry. We are still in our first segment. This is Phase 3 Wellness Podcast. This is the live version on blogtalkradio.com. This is the Phase 3 Wellness Podcast. And now let's turn over to the next article in this Week in Natural News review segment. The shocking third leading cause of death in the U.S. Number one is heart disease. Number two is cancer. And what is number three? Number three is medical malpractice. Yep, number three is medical malpractice. You don't hear much about that, but the number three leading cause of death in America is medical malpractice. Now, this was taken basically based off of an article from naturalnews.com, September 26th. And I just took some information from that article. They were talking about, they were comparing accidental gun deaths to malpractice. But generally speaking, I just wanted to look at that, and because they cite a study that was done by, it was an 8-year study that was done by Johns Hopkins University. And they found that there were at least 250,000 deaths in America every year due to malpractice. Now, some time ago, the AMA, the American Medical Association, came out, and they pretty much admitted that somewhere around 200,000 deaths a year, and it was considered conservative. This is some years ago, were caused by malpractice. So this is not something new. There have been many previous studies that have pretty much come out. But this was another 8-year study by Johns Hopkins University, and they found that at least 250,000 deaths a year, again, are caused in America due to malpractice. Now think about this. Normally, when you may hear the media gets a hold of the pharmaceutical companies or those who stand to make a lot of money off drug treatment, something, they will come out and they say, oh, you know, we find that this herb is dangerous, or this naturopath, or this doctor over here, this herbalist, they gave something and this herb had an adverse effect and this person got very sick, or this person died, which almost never happens. But let's say something that does happen, and they would blow it all out of proportion, and one person got sick or one person died, and it's like, oh, we should shut down natural medicine. We need to regulate it more, these things. And I'm not against overall regulation, but the point I'm trying to make is that we shouldn't have too much regulation to take away people's rights and choices, but you must have enough regulation to keep people safe. But they're using the excuse of keeping people safe to restrict people's liberty to use what they want to use for their health. Now also think about it. If you take a herb and you get a little bit sick, or because you took too much, or whatever, it's a big thing to shut down your access to that herb for whatever reason, or if there's a big marketing campaign to tear down the herb or whatever, say it's dangerous to you. But yet, wrong drugs can kill hundreds of thousands. There can be medical malpractice to the tune of 250,000 people a year, and it's accepted. and it's like it's supposed to be accepted. And that's not acceptable to when you have alternatives to use. Now, it goes on to say that in this article that CNBC also reported that number is actually higher than 250,000. The 250,000 they put on the low end, as other studies have found that deaths actually surpass 400,000 per year. So we know that at least 250,000 people a year are killed from medical malpractice, but possibly up to 400,000 per year, probably more likely. And the reason they point out in the article is because physicians, coroners, and funeral directors rarely note human errors on death certificates, and these are what the CDC relies on to post death statistics. Such cases are, so as a result, such cases are more than likely drastically underreported. So that's true. You know, you're not going to, in most cases, you're not going to find where a doctor made a mistake or a nurse made a mistake or there was a mix-up on medication being on the death certificate as the reason a person died, because they're opening themselves up to lawsuits. So as a result, they put other causes on these death certificates. And so the true number, as it's been pointed out by a number of other sources, including CNBC, is probably closer to 400,000. But let's say either way, based upon the Johns Hopkins University study, at least a minimum of 250,000 people die a year. Now, when you look at the CDC chart as well, look at these charts, you don't see this as the third leading cause of death. You'll see like cancer. You see heart disease first, cancer, and then you see diabetes or something else. But you don't see malpractice. Now, it's interesting when we think about it, we add to that the World Health Organization, according to this naturalnews.com article, considers patient safety to be a serious global public health concern. So not only in the U.S., but the World Health Organization considers patient safety to be a serious global public health concern, with at least 42.7 million patients being harmed during hospitalization. And it goes on to say that the risk of patients experiencing an adverse event while in the hospital is now 1 in 300. So basically, on average, every 1 in 300 people that enter the hospital they're going to experience an adverse event while there, not caused by something that they had when they went in there. Meanwhile, at least 7 million people around the world suffer disabling surgical complications, 1 million of whom die as a result. So 7 million people worldwide will experience a disabling surgical complication when going into a hospital, and 1 million out of that 7 million will die. Now, let me be clear. I'm not saying that there's never a cause for allopathic medicine or for hospitals or things of that nature. They have their benefits. But I'm just pointing out that there's other things to consider. And also, it's set up as the superior medicine in that no alternative should be allowed, that we should just take this as the alternative and this is the best that we can do, as opposed to taking into consideration that there's many times other things that can be done to help people who are sick. And also, people need to understand that there are risks to allopathic medicine, and they need to be informed of these risks, and also not only informed of these risks, but be given the opportunity to make an informed decision. Now, I'm all for if a person knows and they're given a decision to go with natural or holistic medicine and they choose not to, then I'm all for their right to go with whatever they want. And so this is because ultimately they themselves have to suffer the result or the benefit or experience the benefit from whatever they decide to do. There are many cases that alternative medicine and allopathic medicine could work together. There are many cases that it could work together, but the problem is the pharmaceutical companies, they get in and they want to dominate or monopolize the whole area. And then some doctors buy into it and become arrogant with regard to thinking that what they do is superior to any other form of medicine. Instead of understanding, listen, my form of medicine has some limitations in some areas. That's just the reality of it. But that's not what's being done. And so the reality is these failures are showing that, listen, your medicine, your type of medicine does have limitations. Drugs, understand, listeners, drugs do not cure disease. I'm not saying that if you're in a situation where you need a drug to save your life, I'm not saying not to take it. But what I am saying is that you need to understand that all drugs have side effects, that drugs do not cure disease. They have, in many cases, they can be beneficial for a short amount of time, as I said before. But if don't place your hands, your health, in the hands of drugs. And if you can find something natural that can benefit you as opposed to that drug, by all means do it. But if you're in an accident, or if you are having a heart attack, you need something to be stabilized, and you need a drug to stabilize you quickly, by all means, if that's the only thing that you can use, then use it. But just understand that drugs do not cure disease. Understand that. It will only point out that in the United States, the 250,000 annual death figure makes medical errors the third leading cause of death, as I said earlier, behind heart disease and cancer. According to Johns Hopkins, to the study that Johns Hopkins did, 10% of all deaths in America are a result of medical error. Now, I just want to say this again. If I, as a naturopath, gave someone something or made a medical error or gave them something that killed them, you would never hear the end of it. It would be all over the news, and natural medicine would be brought into disrepute, as if this one death that was caused by a medical error, let's say that it was a herb or something and they took too much or whatever, they didn't follow what they were told to do. And sometimes I've experienced this where I've recommended someone take a herb at a particular amount and they take more than they were told to take, or they don't take as much as they were supposed to take, instead of just following exactly the instructions that they were given. Most of the time, a competent natural practitioner will sit down, and everything that they've put together in a protocol for you will have a specific benefit. And many times, if they've done their homework, it will work synergistically with everything else, what they're giving you. And that's why it's important to take exactly what you've been told to take in exactly the way that you've been told to take it. Sometimes people don't do that. And I'm sure many times they don't do that with their regular allopathic doctors either. So just understand, that's a different story than just medical mistakes or medical malpractices. But think about it. If natural practitioners were as a result of medical errors, if 250,000 people were dying a year, or between 250,000 and 400,000 were dying a year, they would shut the whole natural medical industry down. But we see, on the other hand, that's not happening. According to the article, the Johns Hopkins study, they used statistics and other studies, including one from Health and Human Services Department Inspector General, hospital admission rates, and data from the Agency for Healthcare Research. Deaths due to medical error might include those caused by staff with inadequate skills, defect, a preventable adverse effect, an error in care of judgment, computer breakdown, medication or dosage mix-ups, and undiagnosed surgical complications. So those are some of the reasons that people die as a result of medical errors. Let me read those to you again from their study, from this article that cited the Johns Hopkins study. They may not be limited to, but they at least include those caused by staff with inadequate skills, a system defect, a preventable adverse effect, an error in care or judgment, computer breakdowns, medication or dosage mix-ups, and undiagnosed surgical complications. So those are some of the reasons that 200,000 to 400,000 Americans die a year from medical errors. Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine's Dr. Martin Makary said, quote, top-ranked causes of death as reported by the CDC inform our country's research, funding, and public health priorities. Right now, cancer and heart disease get a ton of attention, but since medical errors don't appear on the list, the problem doesn't get the funding and attention it deserves. So again, what's the shocking third leading cause of death in the U.S. after heart disease and cancer? Medical errors. Simple as that. And so, again, you're listening to Phase 3 Wellness, the Phase 3 Wellness podcast. I am Dr. Keith Henry, your host. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm broadcasting out of the Orlando, Florida area. Again, I thank you for listening. We are in just finished up our first segment, which is the Week in National News Review segment. We're here every Sunday at 3:30 live. Again, the podcast is available probably about 10 or 15 minutes, roughly 10 minutes probably after it's over. The podcast is available on many platforms, including iTunes, YouTube, Facebook, etc. So just mean you can visit Phase3Ministries.com. You can visit Phase3Wellness.com. You can visit the Phase 3 Wellness Facebook page, Phase 3 Wellness YouTube channel. You can come back here on blogtalkradio.com and look up Phase 3 Wellness, and you can listen to this episode and past episodes. We're setting up a site specifically for this podcast where you can access all these podcasts. It just take a little time to get that set up. But again, we're gonna pivot over to our second segment here, the Healing Food segment. And this segment is actually sponsored by a local business in Orlando. They're going to sponsor this segment, and they are Happy Heart Lawn Service. Happy Heart Lawn Service, they do lawn cuttings in Orlando, Florida area, specifically in Orlando, not only in Orlando, but the surrounding areas as well. So if you are in the Orlando area and you're looking for a legitimate, or not only legitimate, but also a dependable lawn service, you can call Teron or Frederick at 407-576-0682. Happy Heart Lawn Service. Again, they are sponsoring this segment, this next segment, which is the Healing Food segment. Now, again, on this segment, as I said earlier, we're going to be talking about cherries. And if you haven't listened before, the food that we're talking about in this segment, we pick out a food every week, and we talk about the benefits of that food. It's not an exhaustive discussion. It's just some of the benefits of eating some of the foods that our Creator has given us, and talk about the benefits that He's packed into these foods. Now, so a little bit of the benefits of cherries. Cherries, of course, they are members of the same fruit family as peaches, plums, apricots, and almonds. And many times people think of cherries as dessert foods, etc., but they actually have a very healthy side. They have a therapeutic side. There are two primary varieties of cherries that you should know about. They are sweet and tart, also known as sour cherries. And sweet cherries, such as Bing cherries, are best eaten fresh, of course, and raw, while the sour cherries tend to develop a fuller flavor when they're used in cooking, which is why they're often used for baking. Tart cherries are also used to make juice concentrates that themselves have unique health benefits. Now, first, let's look at some of the benefits of cherries overall. Cherries contain powerful antioxidants. Again, we've talked about antioxidants, how beneficial they are to the body. They contain powerful antioxidants like anthocyanins and cyanidine. In fact, there was one study that found the antioxidant activity of these substances isolated from tart cherries was superior to that of even vitamin E, and comparable to commercially available antioxidant products. So that's amazing. So again, vitamin E is one of the top antioxidants. And for cherries to have these antioxidants like anthocyanins contained in them, that's one of the benefits you can get from eating them. Sweet cherries also contain a small amount of quercetin, which is among some of the most potent antioxidants. And they promote health from they actually promote a wide range of other benefits. Give a wide range of health benefits, rather. Now, cherries also contain anti-cancer or cancer-preventing compounds. So again, so if you whether you like cherries or not, I'm just telling you some of the benefits of eating cherries. Sweet cherries contain fiber. They contain vitamin C, carotenoids, and anthocyanins. Again, those powerful antioxidants. And each of these can benefit, or they may play a role in cancer prevention, according to the National Cherry Growers and Industries Foundation. Of course, I will take that with a grain, not a grain of salt, but they put out, of course, they have an interest and talking about the benefits of cherries, but cherries are, we know they are beneficial. So they put out a according to the National Cherry Growers and Industry Foundation, they say, quote, the potential role of sweet cherries in cancer prevention lies mostly in the anthocyanin content, especially in cyanidin. Sweet cherries are a good source of cyanidins, which appear to act as an antioxidant, and in this role, they may reduce cancer risk. That's true. We know that they do contain an antioxidant, and we do know that antioxidants of that nature can help reduce cancer risk. They actually cite a study using human cancer cell lines demonstrated cell cycle arrest and apoptosis, that means cell death, of mutated cells exposed to these cherry anthocyanins. And they go on to say that further research suggests that the growth arrest characteristics of cyanidin are likely, at least in part, to be a result of significant inhibitory effects of these cherry components. So again, cherries can have because of the antioxidants contained in them, can have a cancer-preventing effect. Now, I'm not surprised with that, because you've heard me say before that the closer you eat to the garden and the closer you eat to the colors of the rainbow, the healthier you're going to be. Again, those seven colors of the rainbow, Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. So the fresher your foods are and the closer you eat to the colors of the rainbow, basically you know that you're getting a healthier food, but how are you getting a healthy overall diet? Again, another thing that studies have shown with regard to eating cherries, that cherries have the ability to reduce inflammation. That meant many people who've taken cherries for arthritis. And in fact, it was a study that involved over 600 people who had gout. And those who ate only a half cup serving of cherries a day, which is the equivalent of about 10 or 12 cherries, or consume a cherry extract, had a 35% lower risk of a subsequent gout attack. Those who ate more cherries, up to 3 servings in 2 days, had an even lower 50% reduction in risk. So if you have gout, now, first of all, you want to look at what's the underlying cause. If you have gout, the underlying cause of gout typically is uric acid accumulating in the joint, typically of the big toe. So that uric acid typically comes from beef, eating the uric acid, the urine, and animal flesh. So again, you know, as a naturopath, I want to talk about what's the cause. Yes, the cherries will help with the inflammation and it will help with developing gout, but you also want to remove the thing that will cause gout in the first place. And one of the things that will reduce the likelihood if you're developing gout is not eating red meat. Of course, I'm a plant-based naturopath, so I encourage the getting off of the consumption of all animal products. It's just, we know that that's the best diet. It is actually what we call a heavenly diet. For those of you who are Christians, and even if you're not Christian, you'll know the book of Genesis actually gave what we would call a plant-based or vegan diet to man from the Creator. So you cannot improve upon that diet. This is why the science and studies actually come out again and again and again, and it shows how prolific this diet is at helping us have healthier lives. This study that I cited here, gout occurs, as I said before, with the excess of uric acid forming crystals in your joints, et cetera. Now, past studies have actually found that eating 2 servings of cherries after an overnight fast led to a 15% reduction in uric acid and lower nitric oxide and C-reactive protein levels, which are associated with inflammatory diseases like gout. And also, the researchers have also noted this, that the reputed anti-gout efficacy of cherries as well as evidence that compounds in cherries may inhibit inflammatory pathways. Cherries also help with sleep. Cherries contain natural melatonin. So again, you know, if you're having problems sleeping after removing other things that may also involve themselves, or just including cherries in your diet, just understand that cherries do contain natural melatonin. Again, melatonin is a powerful antioxidant. It's also a free radical scavenger, and it helps cool down or reduce that excess inflammation, which is basically the one of the top cause associated with most diseases. So again, cherries help with, they have melatonin as well. Arthritis pain relief overall. Sometimes people have gotten a lot of benefit of taking some type of a concentrated cherry supplement of some sort to help with their arthritis pain, because cherries contain many anti-inflammatory compounds. And also research suggests that that cherries may also help relieve pain from inflammatory osteoarthritis. There was a study, there was one study with women with osteoarthritis who drank tart cherry juice two times a day for 3 weeks, had significant reductions in markers of inflammation. And also that inflammation is going to would be indicative of the pain and irritation. And so if you can reduce these markers of inflammation, you're going to reduce the pain and irritation, typically. They also found in this study that they had a 20% reduction in pain, and the researchers noted that tart cherries have the highest anti-inflammatory content of any food. That's significant. So also, another thing that's been associated with eating cherries is reduced belly fat. Now, in an animal study, rats that were fed tart cherry powder along with a high-fat diet gained less weight and built up less body fat than rats that were not fed the tart cherries. They also had lower levels of inflammation and triglycerides, which suggested a potential role in their heart health. Again, but that was a rat study, so it may or may not translate over into humans. Many times it does, sometimes it doesn't. Also, another couple of the things, they've also found that athletes who consume tart cherry juice prior to long-distance running experience less pain than those who did not. And it's thought that the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties of tart cherries may have a protective effect to reduce muscle damage and pain during strenuous exercise. Again, so you're saying most of the benefit, the larger part of the benefit, rather, is coming from eating the tart cherries. And finally, there's been some connection of eating the tart cherries associated with helping to lower your risk of developing a stroke or having a stroke. So again, those are some of the benefits of cherries. I was not trying to go into an exhaustive study on it, but this is one of the things that we do when we talk about the healing food segment. We just want to address some of these foods in this particular segment that actually are beneficial, and show some of the benefits of eating some of these foods and some of the benefits of including these foods in your diet. Maybe you're eating them or you might not be eating them. And sometimes people realize when they hear some of the benefits of some of these foods, they're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that just eating, you know, okra, or eating apples, or eating oranges, or even kiwis or whatever it is, I didn't realize that this food was so high in this or can benefit this issue or benefit that issue. So that's one of the reasons that we do the healing food segment. And it's actually one of the most popular segments of the show. The healing food segment. Again, this is Dr. Keith Henry. This is Phase 3 Wellness Podcast. Again, I want to remind you that segment, the healing food segment for this week, was sponsored by Happy Heart Lawn Service, and they're based in Orlando, Florida. If you're looking for a lawn service, dependable, you can call them at 407-576-0682. That's 407-576-0682. And thank them for sponsoring this segment. Our next segment and our final segment is the healing herb segment. Now, our healing herb segment this week, we're going to be talking about milk thistle, which is one of my favorite herbs. And again, in this segment, we pick a herb, and we don't try and give a detailed discussion. We could pick any one herb and spend an entire hour of the show talking about the benefits of it and how to use it. But we take a herb, the same way we do a food, and we talk a little bit about some of the benefits of that herb. Now, we're going to talk about milk thistle in the context. We have about 10 minutes left here in the context of how it works on the liver, because it has some other benefits, but primarily, it is a herb that is an excellent herb for your liver. Now, according to a 2005 report issued by the Department of Health and Human Services, the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control and Prevention, the CDC, screened 2,500 Americans for 148 industrial chemicals, and they found significant amounts of these chemicals in the blood of every person that was tested. Every person. So they screened 2,500 people, Americans, for 148 industrial chemicals, and every one of them had significant, not small amounts, but a significant amounts of these chemicals in the blood of everyone that they tested. So you can deduce from that that if you're listening to this and you're in America, you probably have some of these chemicals in your blood. But studies show that milk thistle, which is a herb, which has been used since antiquity, it's been powerful to treat liver disease and to help detoxify your liver. And we especially need our liver detoxified because our liver is under great burden, having to deal with the environmental toxins, having to deal with stress, the toxins produced in our bodies from stress, from toxic foods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, milk thistle is now being used to address drug and alcohol-related liver disease, viral hepatitis, and other diseases that we're seeing in this 21st century, like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is I refer to as NAFLD, or that's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Keep in mind, NAFLD, or is fatty liver disease, is actually reaching, in the United States, is reaching right now epidemic proportions. It currently affects 80 million Americans, and is the most common liver condition in children. So again, that's NAFLD, or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Because of the great burden on our livers, we're developing liver disease, non-fatty alcoholic liver disease. Now, we have to understand the liver's functions include, the liver has many, many functions, some known, probably some unknown, but some of its major functions include regulating blood sugar and your hormones. So many people didn't realize that the liver plays a role in regulating your blood sugar. So you can have an unhealthy liver, can be associated with you developing diabetes. So this is why a natural practitioner, when you're looking at your body, we would look at everything that could possibly, if you have diabetes, we would look at everything that could possibly be affecting your blood sugar. Like, for instance, the liver could be affecting your blood sugar. So the liver's functions include, but are not limited to, regulating blood sugar and your hormones, storing nutrients, producing bile, cholesterol, as well as red blood cell components. But that, among other things, some have anticipated that it has hundreds of tasks directly and indirectly. So the liver is crucially, crucially important. But one of its most important tasks is neutralizing toxins, which are then transported for elimination out of the body through the bowels. So think about it. When the liver can't sufficiently neutralize and dispose of toxins, these toxins can then accumulate in your liver and in body fat, or circulate in your bloodstream, ultimately ending up in your bones, your lymph, or your brain, which is not where you want them to be. So we need to understand that also the liver contributes to detoxification of the body by promoting the production of glutathione, which is the body's master antioxidant. So although every living cell in the body behaves as glutathione, the liver contains more of this disease-fighting substance than any other organ or tissue in the body. So again, glutathione, which is the master antioxidant, is crucial, crucial, crucial to the body. But the body's storehouse of glutathione are not unlimited. So you don't just have an unlimited supply. If the glutathione in the liver is completely overwhelmed, as does occur in overdose of acetaminophen or Tylenol, the active ingredient Tylenol, if the glutathione amount is overwhelmed in the liver, then you can end up with liver failure and even possibly death. That's how important glutathione is. It's the body's master antioxidant. So you can see how it can be overwhelmed and you can die or suffer serious illness. Now, milk thistle actually lowers the risk of you developing liver disease. And again, we've talked about how important the liver is. Now, the active ingredient, the main active constituent in milk thistle, and I kind of say the main because a lot of times we break off or extract certain elements from certain herbs. I like using herbs in their full capacity because there's sometimes we extract things out of them that are there. They've been put there by the creator to help to work synergistically with even the main ingredients. But I understand they've been able to sometimes use it in a more concentrated form. But I just like using it in a whole herb form when possible. Now, silymarin, which is the active constituent in milk thistle, is a potent antioxidant and it's also anti-inflammatory. And it actually stimulates the detoxification pathways in the liver, which promotes the regeneration of liver cells. It also helps the liver, it helps to prevent liver scarring, and it also helps to strengthen cell wall. There's been many studies that have been done on, I'm not going to go into the studies because I don't have time, but there have been many studies that have been done on milk thistle. And so it has a lot of, milk thistle has a lot of detoxification elements to help keep the liver detoxified. So as it keeps itself detoxified, it can function at its optimal rate. For example, disease fighting, when it comes to disease fighting, whenever you can, for instance, say you have someone that's dealing with cancer, in pretty much every case of cancer, the liver is going to be overburdened. It's not being able to work to its capacity to detoxify the body. Cancer has gotten a hold, and that's one of the things that needs to be done. And so to help keep from getting to that point, one of the things that we can do is eat healthy to protect our liver. We can take milk thistle to help protect our liver. Exercise, and then the thing that we talked about here, the laws of health to protect our liver, but milk thistle is definitely one of the things you want to consider when helping to detoxify your liver. In a large observational study involving 2,637 patients with chronic liver disease, researchers found that silymarin substantially reduced AST and ALT liver enzymes. Elevated liver enzymes are markers of liver dysfunction. So these markers of liver dysfunction were brought down in 2,637 people by using the active ingredient in milk thistle. Researchers found that it substantially reduced these enzymes, these elevated liver enzymes that indicated liver dysfunction. Also, in a systematic review published in 2001 in Drugs, the authors reported that silymarin scavenged free radicals while inhibiting the pro-inflammatory 5-LOX pathway, and that it accomplished this safely with only rare side effects. And so understand, milk thistle extracts can actually arrest and even reverse liver damage from toxins. So once you remove the offending toxins and then introduce, say, milk thistle, you can actually get the benefits from milk thistle, this God-given herb, to help detoxify the liver. And then once it's detoxified, it can function at its optimal rate. There's been also studies that have shown that silymarin prevents, or the active ingredients in milk thistle, prevents the binding of toxins to your cell membrane receptors, making it effective against a variety of carcinogens and biological toxins. So by preventing these carcinogens, the ability to attach to your cell wall, it actually helps your cells fight off or live longer, not be affected by these poisons. Now, also, as I'm about out of time, there was an animal study published in 2009 in the International Journal of Biological Sciences. The researchers found that a combination of garlic extract and silymarin, or the active ingredient in milk thistle, helped reverse the harmful effects of NDEA, an environmental carcinogen. The team reported that the garlic and milk thistle acted synergistically. They worked together, in other words, to significantly reduce liver toxicity, which it did by lowering elevated liver enzymes, replenishing glutathione, and increasing levels of the natural antioxidants. So, some of the main natural antioxidants. So, again, it's amazing at what milk thistle can do. Finally, the last, I want to give you one last slide. One of the most eye-opening studies involved 452 patients with poisoning from mushrooms. A group treated with milk thistle, the active ingredient in milk thistle, experienced half the mortality rate, 9.8%, as a conventionally treated group, who 18.3%. So the active ingredient in milk thistle cut the death rate from these poison mushrooms in half based upon those who took drugs. I want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Faith 3 Wellness Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. And I want you to make sure that you, if you started listening in the middle of this broadcast, you didn't catch all of it. Again, it'll be available in about probably about 10 to 15 minutes after the show is over. I want to again thank you for listening. Be sure to join me right here again next Sunday at 3:30 for Phase 3 Wellness.